Welcome to Crime Wave, the podcast featuring mystery, thriller, and suspense authors and the stories behind their stories. Crime Wave is part of the Authors on the Air radio network with over 4 million listeners worldwide. I'm Bonner Spring, and my guest today is Betty Webb. As a journalist, Betty interviewed U.S. presidents, astronauts, and Nobel Prize winners, as well as the homeless, dying, and polygamy runaways. Her dark Lena Jones mysteries are based on stories she covered as a reporter. And Betty's humorous Gun Zoo series debuted with the critically acclaimed The Anteater of Death, best title ever, and followed by the Koala of Death. She's a book reviewer at Mystery Scene Magazine, a member of the National Federation of Press Women, Mystery Writers of America, and the National Organization of Zookeepers. One of my favorite things about hosting Crime Wave is the opportunity to get to know authors I might otherwise not have a chance to meet. So I'm really looking forward to talking with you today, Betty. Welcome to Crime Wave.
Hi.
Well, we're going to focus today on our podcast on Betty's newest mystery, The Clock Struck Murder, which releases on April 9th, 2024. It's the second in a series, one that I didn't mention in her bio, featuring American expat in Paris, Zoe Barlow. Now, this podcast is called Crime Wave, so I usually lead with the crime, you know, the puzzle that needs to be solved. But really, Zoe is such a fascinating character that perhaps you could start us off by introducing her.
Yes, Zoe is originally from Alabama, but she was a debutante, lived on a big plantation that belonged to her family. However, she fell in love with a Black musician named Pete, and they got married in the traditional way, which is jumping the broom. And before he left for World War I, which he died in, she got pregnant. And as soon as the baby was born, the baby was taken away from her, disappeared. She knew not where that baby went. And she was sent to Paris because she was an aspiring artist, but her family didn't even want her in the country. So they sent her there and to live, they figured, a horrible life, which would be her punishment. Well, it didn't work out that way. She immediately gained a ton of friends because it was 1922 when she got to Paris. Just after World War I ended. And got a ton of friends and artists, writers, everybody was in Paris at that time, mainly for the arts, the very lively art scene. However, there was another reason everyone went to Paris is because it was prohibition in the United States. And in Paris, they could drink all they want. And so there were quite a few boozers in there, which kept everything lively and kept things from getting too high toned, shall we say. So, however, as happy as her life has been in Paris, she wants to know what happened to her baby. And I covered a lot of that in the first book in the series, which was Lost in Paris. Lost meaning theoretically she was lost, but also her baby, a little girl, was lost. So she has hired a large private detective firm, Pinkerton, to find that baby. So while she's solving murders, she turns out to be good at it. She's at the same time trying to find her child, and that comes first. So that's about all I really want to wind up with here, because it is a mystery. So I don't want to say too much other than she does have a lover in Paris, and his name is Henri Gillot, but he's married. And so this makes it kind of complicated. I thought several times about allowing him to be married because, you know, that's adultery. So I thought, but you know something, I can't write about Paris without having sex in the book. And so I thought, okay, look, she's kicking over the traces. His wife is in a coma from a stroke. And so they meet over a dead body, basically. in the first book. Now this, the second book, they're meeting over another dead body, but this one was a real surprise. But I love Zoe because she's the kind of person I wish I had. She's brave, and I'm kind of a chicken. She's brave. She's industrious. I'm lazy. She's just everything I wanted to be. She's much prettier than I even thought of being, dreamed of. And she's also very, very protective. And I think maybe it's because she lost her baby and she doesn't know if that child is dead or alive. And so when someone comes to her with a problem, she wants to help. And so that's my gal, and I adore her.
Well, I can certainly see why, Betty. She was a delight. She is a delightful character. Yeah. Now, you've given us an absolutely wonderful setup for who Zoe is. So what's the crime at the heart of the plot of the Clockstruck murder? Let's go there now.
Right. Okay. Now, obviously, it's going to be murder. However, the crime itself.
You don't have to give away any spoilers. Okay.
Okay. The crime actually started back in 1814, near there, what happens is her clock got broke by one of her drunken friends at a party, and she has to have a clock. So she walks down to a flea market. Now, by the way, I have to say the background on this is that I did go to flea markets every time I went to Paris. They're wonderful. They're just wonderful. You get treasures for nothing. And so she knows that. So she goes down to a neighborhood flea market and finds just the right clock. But it's big enough that it needs to be wrapped up or it might not make it back to her house uninjured. So the sales lady wraps it up in an old rag, a greasy old rag. And so my dear Zoe, she carries the clock home. She unwraps the clock. And what does she see? The clock has been wrapped in original Marc Chagall painting. She's an artist. She knows from Chagall. And she's, what the heck? What the heck? What am I doing with a Chagall? I did not buy a Chagall. She runs back to the flea market to find out what happened. And the flea market's gone for the day, but she knows where they keep their wares. So she goes over to the old shed where they keep their wares, and she finds the dead body of the gal that sold the clock to her. Enter her lover, Detective Chaillot, Henri. But she doesn't, she has to report the murder, but she's keeping her hands on the Chagall because she doesn't want something to happen to the Chagall at the police department. But she knows where Chagall lives because he's in Paris at that time. And she goes over to his house and said, "Here, this is yours." And he is just beside himself with joy. She goes back to the, after all of the police investigation is finished and they have left, she goes back to the flea market, goes through the shed and finds several Chagalls. Now in real life, this is what happened. Marc Chagall, before World War I broke out, wanted to go back to Russia where his fiance lived, marry her and then bring her back to Paris. So World War broke out and he couldn't get out of Russia. So he had closed up his studio before he left. Unfortunately, he didn't lock it. And so while World War I was playing out, he was still in Russia and junkyard enthusiasts were going through all of his works and absconding with them. The funniest thing that happened to one of his works, a gorgeous work with Fiddler on the Roof, of course, was that the owner of the studio where he lived and worked took one of the paintings and thought, oh, this would be great because oil paint that's waterproof. And my poor bunnies that I'm raising for dinner, my poor bunnies want, they're out in the wet. So she's got a bunny hutch out there. So she takes this original Chagall oil painting and hammers it over the bunny hutch to keep the rain off of them. That is a true story. And every time I think of it, I just go crazy. So she, Zoe sees it. She sets the bunnies free and gets the painting and takes that along with all of the other paintings back to Chagall. So we do have a dead woman, Lorette, and she is, she's very, very beautiful. And as Zoe looks at the case, because she's you know, a young gal, couldn't be more than 20, dead, head bashed in. And so what's going on around all this is the Olympics. It's the first Summer Olympics in Paris, which, by the way, was exactly 100 years ago. And we're having the Summer Olympics in Paris again, starting in July. So this is kind of an anniversary book of the Paris Olympics. And so she's having to run around Paris with all of the tourists that are there for the Olympics and do her investigation. What I'm going to do is just read the first paragraph of the book that'll give you an idea of what Zoe thinks about the Olympics. Zoe Barlow ordinarily loved Paris, but of late she had been loving it less now that the 1924 Summer Olympics were here. The previous winter sports week had been bad enough, but at least the games had been based miles and miles away from Paris. Whereas now, for the better part of June and now July, Paris was awash with tourists babbling in a dozen different languages, getting lost and wandering into busy intersections without bothering to look both ways. Taxis honked and screeched, and dray horses, never bred to suffer such crowds, neighed in distress. The air was redolent with human sweat, gasoline, and horse shit. Well, that's the setting of a book based on truth.
That's absolutely awesome. You know, you actually anticipated one of my later questions. That's so much fun because I'm aware that the Olympics are going to be in Paris again this summer, 100 years later. You know, I just learned, Betty, that this is the very first time ever that the Tour de France, the cycling race, is not going to end in Paris on account of the Olympics. This is absolutely fascinating. Now, I love Paris. I've set thrillers all over the world, but with your time frame that's so specific, the Summer Olympics in Paris in 1924, I'm guessing that needs a very specific sort of research.
Well, the irony is that I didn't know anything about the Olympics being in Paris at that time. So what I like to do when I start research on a book is I will check everything. And so in one of the sites that I found, they were talking about the Paris Olympics. And I thought, wait, this can't be right because the time is wrong. And then I did a little more research and I thought, by gosh, that article was right. And so I thought, first of all, you can't write about Paris without writing about sex and booze. And you can't write about 1924 in Paris without having the Olympics mentioned a time or two. I don't talk a lot about the Olympics, except toward the climax, because Zoe meets an Olympic hero who gives her, he's just talking and making nice and being friendly, but he gives her a clue. He doesn't realize he's dropping a clue, which actually leads to the solving of the crime. And by the way, that Olympic hero is Johnny Westmuller, or Weissmuller, depending on how you pronounce it. And he is the for the younger folks that are listening, Johnny Weissmuller was a wonderful swimmer. He won several gold medals at that Olympics, but he went on to have a show business career as Tarzan. And he also, and I put the reality also in a author's note at the back, that he turned out to be a hero and saved a lot of lives. And so I learned about that when I was doing my research on the Olympics. And I thought, darn it, I am going to put Johnny Weissmuller in this book one way or another.
Good. That's really nice. Now, that's an interesting way of combining what I see as journalism with writing fiction. And you were essentially a journalist, I guess, for the earliest part of your life. Do you see a big difference in writing fiction and nonfiction?
Well, you know, a lot of people will say there is no difference, but I can assure you that journalism is the truth, and fiction, you make it all up. But you know how people are. They love to shoot the messenger, and what the heck, you know, go ahead, aim at me. But we're allowed to use stronger verbs in writing fiction, whereas, of course, you don't do that when you're writing a newspaper article. And you can look into a person's background, but you can clean it up in fiction. Whereas if you're a journalist and you're writing about a particular politician and they've done something wicked, well, you don't clean that up. You just say, so-and-so did something wicked. And of course, you're specific about the wickedness.
Yeah. Yeah. What made you choose crime fiction when you turned to fiction?
This is interesting. When I was still a reporter, they, for some reason, decided that they needed a book reviewer. And rather than hire one, they said, oh, Betty reads a lot. We'll let her review. And I thought, oh, geez. I noticed as all the publishers were sending me books, the ones that I liked the most were mysteries. And I had never noticed that before. And so I started reading and reading and reading, and I thought, you know, maybe I'd like to do one, but I wish I don't have a plot. Well, one day my editor told me to go and check out an art exhibit that was bringing supposedly a Native American artist to town for a show. So I went over there. Oh, first I have to tell you, I live a half a mile from the Indian reservation, the Pima Salt River Indian Reservation. Okay. And I run into those people all the time, and I write about them all the time. But when I got to that art gallery and I looked at the paintings, I knew right away that was not done by a Native American artist. And because the art exhibit was naked Indian women. That is not that's what I did. I went, oh, you know, so
wow.
I got in an argument with the gallery owner, and I stomped out, and I was so enraged. My husband had come with me, but when he saw I was getting hot with that art dealer, he left. He's waiting for me outside. So I storm out and I said, somebody ought to kill that gallery owner. And he looked at me and he said, Betty, there's your plot. So in the first book in that series, I killed an art gallery owner. And it was, I didn't name names. I made something up is what I did, because I'm allergic to being sued.
That's wonderful. That is absolutely great. That is really nice. Well, are you writing anything new right now that you can share with us?
Yes, I am. And I tried to do a numbers on all the people that I've killed in mysteries, and it's about 60. And I had no idea that I was that bloodthirsty. But of course, I killed them slowly through the pages of the book. Well, I decided this new book that I'm working on now, which is more of a suspense, I decided to start with a bunch of dead people. And that was because they're already dead. And so that frees me to do other things. And I'm having, but I don't want to talk too much about it. You know what they say? If you talk about the work in progress, you may lose steam. So I'm real.
No, I totally understand. Yeah, I don't want you to lose any of your steam. Now, one question that you may not see coming, and it has for everyone listening, it has zero to do with the clock struck murder, but okay. It got my attention. So for everyone listening who was paying attention when I read Betty's bio, there was one service organization mentioned that was quite intriguing. And I wasn't sure how it fit into your life. You are a member of the National Organization of Zookeepers. Would you please tell us how that came about, Betty?
Well, you know, I wrote a lot of really grim and dark mysteries with the Lena Jones series. And at that point, when the last one was written, I retired from my job at the newspaper. And I got home and I didn't have enough to do. I was still writing on my books, but I wasn't doing anything outside. So what I did was I had always loved animals. I went down to the Phoenix Zoo, which is a internationally renowned zoo. And I asked if they wanted a volunteer. And they said, oh, sure, come on. So I started volunteering at the zoo. And next thing you know, I'm falling in love with various animals. The first one being the anteater that wound up in the anteater of death. And I wound up volunteering for the zoo for, gosh, I guess 2.5 years. And at one point, they actually hired me when they didn't have enough people show up. And I can't understand it, but they actually got paid for it. But in the meantime, once I had written that first zoo book, I thought I really need to know more about zoos. And so that's why I wound up there. And it's still delightful. I'm still a member of the zoo and my husband's a member of the zoo. And we go down there and we see all the animals and it's just fun. And there's one thing I can tell you, this is supposedly a secret, but if you want an animal to come out of its hutch, where or a little cave or wherever, jingle your car keys, because that's what the zookeepers do when they're feeding the animals. So they awesome. Will probably come out and say, food, food, and they'll look around and you can get your pictures.
Thank you. That's really, really delightful. Thank you so much. Now, before we go off the air, can you tell listeners where they can find you online?
Yeah, www.bettyweb-mystery.com. All the information is in there. And I do respond to people who email me. There is a facility there at the web to forward the mail.
That's wonderful. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today, Betty. Best wishes for success with the Clock Struck Murder and for the rest of your future writings. I hope you'll come back to visit sometime.
Okay, great. Thank you.